Literally, the fastest people on earth are next to you, and you have to race them. And so you try to not think about what's going on externally around you, but you cannot not think about that. And so it's this battle internally, psychologically, of, okay, be present, do what I can do. And that's bringing all your preparation into that very, very moment and living and being in that moment.
When they walk to their starting blocks, whether they're a swimmer or a track athlete, what are the things that they're doing? Are they talking to themselves? Are they engaging with the crowd? Like, it's so fun to see what they like to do, what they don't like to do. When I was watching swimming, there was a guy walking out with his headphones, like bopping to his music. There's another guy with headphones that was just like stone cold. What helps them get ready for their race? And I think something that's really important to notice is everyone is different. If there was one kind of recipe that would like guarantee you to be a champion, like everyone would do the same. But the great thing about sports is we're all different. We all have things that work for us and things that don't. And I think it would be good for our young listeners who are trying to find their routine, their groove, to kind of just like notice that and take notes and try things that work for you and see what works and see what doesn't. Welcome back to another episode of Ditto. I'm Ashley Hatch, professional soccer player for the Washington Spirit in the NWSL, and I'm here with my co-host, Dr. Matt Moore. Matt,
hello,
how you doing?
Everybody. I'm doing really great, enjoying the summer. Summer's weirdly coming to a close. It went by like a blink of an eye. Is that same for
yes.
you? I mean, did it go by
yeah,
really fast?
It is going by way too fast,
but
I'm excited for fall.
I know. I was just saying that. Then I drove past like high schools and I saw, this is the weirdest example, but it like spurred a lot of emotion. I saw a bunch of high school district leaders, like athletic directors and principals, meeting at like their headquarters here in Alpine, Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, oh, fall's coming, school's
nice.
Starting back up. And especially for me in teaching in higher education, it's always fun to get yeah. going again. So
yeah, for sure. That's exciting.
How are you?
Cool. I'm good. I'm excited to talk about what we're going to talk about today. I had a soccer camp yesterday, last night. It was a lot of fun.
God, those are exhausting.
Yeah,
a lot of fun, but exhausting, right?
Yeah. We had almost 70 girls show up, which was awesome. We had
wow.
a lot of fun. Yeah, so I always enjoy those soccer camps, but I do lose my voice a little bit sometimes. So if I
yeah.
sound a little bit raspy, that's why.
Do you have any of your teachers help you out with that, or who helps
yeah.
you? Yeah. What's that stuff?
Well, Jeff and I do all the logistics, planning, signups, everything. And then
wow.
I just asked a few of my teammates if they wanted to come. Of course, I would pay them for their time. And
yeah,
yeah, I had three teammates show up and it was a lot of fun. They did a great job. And so it's just a really cool opportunity for us to get in the community and just spend more like one-on-one time with
totally.
Yeah, female youth soccer players in our community. It's a lot of fun. So yeah,
are there any teammates great. Like if you just threw out the invitation in general to your team, are there any teammates that if they volunteered you'd be like, no, you're not gonna be? I'm just
no.
kidding. You don't have to say anything.
No, any and all are welcome. Honestly,
like, you can
they would all be great.
Not you.
Yeah, everyone
no, no,
but
no.
you. No, everyone's great. So,
yeah.
I wouldn't be mad if all of them showed up.
Yeah, that's
but,
funny.
But yeah, so
cool.
Anyway, have you been watching any of the Olympics this summer?
I know, this being the Olympic episode, by the way, listeners, Ash and I decided that it would be interesting, maybe a little more interesting than some of the previous episodes we've done, not to say that some of the previous episodes haven't been interesting, to talk about some stories and integrating some of these stories into our conversation, and really about stories that we've been reading about or that we're currently watching, like the Olympics. So to answer your question, yes, I've been trying to watch as much of it as I possibly can. However, I don't have cable. We're one of those
uh-oh.
Families that just kind of bums off of like other family members. Like, hey, what's your login information for Hulu or Netflix or Disney Plus?
Oh,
and
yeah.
so
I've been there.
I know. And so we're kind of in and out of Peacock, where a lot of it's, available. And then we get on YouTube and just watch,
Highlights.
Olympics highlights. Yeah, Paris 2024, and they show all the at least the major events. And so luckily yesterday we were over at my in-laws' house, and they're rich enough to have cable.
Super
And
successful people.
I know that that's the indicator, right? You made it when you're able to have Xfinity in your home. And we what we me and my family, we watched like 4 hours, I think, of
Nice.
all the stuff that has happened up until this day. So anyways, yes, we've been trying to watch as much as we can. How about you? Have you been watching some?
Yeah, we've been on the road this past week, so luckily all the hotels have cable. And we have access. Jeff and I have YouTube TV, which has been really nice. We like that a lot. So
I'm good. Yeah.
yeah, I guess we've made it if we have YouTube TV.
I need to
But
explore YouTube TV. I've heard some good stuff about it.
yeah, it's very nice. But yeah, so any downtime that we have, me and my roommate, we've been watching a lot of Olympics, and it's been a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to track. Track started today. So there's some races that
Oh,
I'm really looking
good.
forward to watching.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Awesome. Have you been watching the soccer stuff, U.S. women's soccer stuff? And
They've been
men's, I guess.
crushing it. Yeah. Yeah,
I
they've been doing
know.
really well. It's been fun to watch.
Men, as we are speaking right now, I think they're down 3-0. It might even be over. Oh my gosh, they just lost 4-0. The men
Oh, to who?
to Morocco.
Oh,
A pow a powerhouse of soccer. Oh gosh.
yeah, that's
That's
unfortunate.
not fun. I know there's been so many amazing stories and events and experiences thus far, and we're only what, are we just a week in, week and a half into the Olympics? No, like a week today, right,
Yeah, I think
at
so.
time of recording, which is
Yeah.
Friday, August 2nd. And so again, listeners, in preparation for this episode, Ashley and I back and forth for the past week have been like, okay, find kind of one or two inspirational, interesting events, stories, experiences that you've been watching to share on the podcast. So, Ashley, what's at least one, maybe two stories or events that you've been watching as a spectator that have really stood out to you, and why? Curious.
Yeah, well, I'll start with one that's pretty relevant because this morning she ran her prelim for the 100 meters. Sha'Carri Richardson.
Yeah.
If you
She's
don't know
awesome.
her, look her up. But I've also been watching the documentary Sprint, kind of like in preparation
So good.
for the upcoming Olympics. And I just finished her kind of like experience in Worlds last year. And for those of you who aren't familiar with track, Worlds is like when it's not an Olympic year, it's like the race of the year. It's like the biggest event that all, especially sprinters, prepare for. And there's a huge rivalry between US and Jamaica because obviously Jamaica is very, very dominant, especially in all the sprinting events. And the way track meets work is you kind of have your like preliminary races to qualify for the final race. And so I think there was like three heats that were, I don't know, people were competing in to qualify for the final race. Top two in every preliminary race make the final, and then it goes by time. And so in this world's event last year, Sha'Carri Richardson was super nervous. She was excited. She felt prepared, but she didn't get top two in the preliminaries, and so she had to wait, which is like very stressful. It's hard because like there's a lot of things outside your control. If someone runs faster in one of the other preliminary races, then you don't make the final. So it was super stressful. Luckily, she made it on time, and then 20 minutes later, she had to prepare. She had to get her mindset right. She had to refocus, reset, and get ready for the final, which I thought was a crazy turnaround to go
I
from
know.
like racing in the preliminaries. I didn't know that it was that close. I thought it would be like the next day, but as I was watching the documentary, it was like, oh, they got 20 minutes now to refocus, regroup, and race in the final. And so I just thought that was insane, but also really cool to see her go from like being kind of like upset to like, okay, I like made it on time, thank goodness, let's forget that real quick because it doesn't matter anymore. I gotta focus on the final. I think she ran the final like in lane 7, so she was one of the
right, she was a disadvantage.
Yeah, she was in one of the quote-unquote slower lanes, right. And she ended up winning the race, which is so cool to see. But I think the reason why that backstory is really important, because she just ran the 100 meter open, just like preliminary race today, and she crushed it. And so a lot of track athletes, I know there's this like kind of debate, it's different for each individual, is like, okay, do you just kind of coast through your preliminary, save time and energy? Obviously for like mid distance and longer distance races, it's probably a little bit more of a concern, just to like save your legs, you coast and try and get first barely, or do you just go all out? And so seeing Sha'Carri race today, it was kind of interesting to see what she was going to do. Like, was she going to make that same mistake again, come out like maybe not as fast as she could, or is she not going to make that same mistake again and just come out and give it her all? And she, from what it looks like, she came out ready to go, because she won her opening race with ease. So that's one story that I thought was interesting, like seeing the backstory of her big races last year coming into the Olympics. What's her mindset going into this Olympics? So I'm excited to continue to see her compete in this event.
Yeah, absolutely. Those documentaries on Netflix, Sprint and Full Swing and Top Spin. No, what's the tennis one?
Breakpoint.
Breakpoint, Top Spin. Breakpoint. There's a lot of them on Netflix. I am loving every single one of them. And Sprint, you mentioned it, the one that just came out was amazing. Mm-hmm. It was so fun to watch for everything you just mentioned. But sprinters, for some reason, are more interesting to me. The spotlight is just, bam, it is just right on them. And, I mean, there's a lot of probably examples that you can come up with in sport that emphasize the need to be present. But sprinters, for some reason, really stand out to me from a psychological standpoint to be present. I mean, you just mentioned, okay, now you have 20 minutes to go do another race. So it's like you said, it's putting the past kind of on the shelf and now bringing your mindset, your headspace back to where it needs to be, which is on this next race. And then when you're in the race, it's like literally the fastest people on earth are next to you and you have to race them. Mm-hmm. And so you don't really have to, you try to not think about what's going on externally around you, but you cannot not think about that. And so it's this kind of this battle internally, psychologically of, okay, be present, do what I can do. And that's bringing all your preparation into that very, very moment and living and being in that moment. It's so, so fun to watch. And then also, and additionally with sprinters, I think it's especially effective or efficacious with routines. I mean, think how routine-based sprinters are from training preparation to the actual event. It brings so much psychological and emotional comfort to that experience of this certain stretch and putting your hands up above your head this way and getting down into your stance this way, like precisely where you're placing your fingers and your feet and how you're doing it and what you're looking at and then looking down at when you go down. There's so much to it that I think is just so fascinating. So yeah, beautiful example.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I thought it was really interesting. And I think one thing that's been kind of cool to see as I've been watching the Olympics is it's always fun to hear the backstories of all these athletes, whether
I know, right?
It's their first Olympics or whether they've been at a previous Olympics and how they did. And it's really cool to see like their motivation for coming, whether it is their first Olympics and they work their whole life to get here for the first time, or whether they've been here 5 times but they want more. They want more gold medals. They want just to continue to compete. And it's, yeah, it's always very interesting to hear their stories. But I was talking to one of my roommates as I was watching, and I think he was watching one of the swimming events, and I think we had a U.S. swimmer, I'm spacing on her name right now, who was a previous champion in this event. And they're kind of all talking about her and how she was dominant in this event. And then the race happens and she ended up getting fourth. And I was like crushed for her because it was like, this is going to be her last. She like came out and said like, this is going to be my last Olympics. And I was just like, man, like winning is loyal to no one like in the Olympics, because it doesn't matter if you're a previous champion or if it's your first, like, anyone can win at any given day, and everyone's like bringing their best to this event or to this Olympics. And so I think it's just so fascinating to watch like previous champions continue to try and be champions, or newcomers come and, you know, take the podium. Like seeing all those stories, like it's so fascinating and so fun to watch.
Yeah, and then you, like, on the opposite end of that, those that have won so much and somehow are continuing to dominate. I mean, I'm talking about Simone Biles. I'm talking about Katie Ledecky in particular. I was just thinking, you know, her, I think it was her 1500 race that she won gold. But she didn't just win. She, like,
dominated.
Just demolished everybody. And so I'm thinking, like, what if you're from Morocco, who's just on my mind because they just beat the U.S. men's team, and you make the Olympics and you're swimming in this event, freestyle, 1500, and you're going up against Katie Ledecky, and she passes you going the opposite way in the pool. You're both Olympians. Like, think how humbling of an experience that would be. And it just speaks to, man, her greatness and Simone Biles' greatness and the preparation and the amount of work and mindset that these individuals put into this. It's crazy. And then they do it on a 4-year, like, programmed situ type of situation, which is, again, really difficult, really strange, and really unique to these particular athletes. Like, you're going to compete, you know, at least at the Olympics, every 4 years. So get ready, because you have over 3 years to prepare. It's just really kind of mind-boggling to put all that into place. And then once again, to see people like Katie Ledecky and Simone Biles come and continually dominate, get gold after gold, it's pretty fascinating. So,
Yeah, I mean, especially, like, one thing also that, like, since we're talking about swimming, that has been fun to kind of like witness and watch, which I would encourage any like young listeners to do as well. Like, when you're watching any of these, especially these like individual events, like swimming or track and field, is people, like you said, people's preparation, but we get to see their walkouts. So when they walk to their starting blocks, whether they're a swimmer or a track athlete, like, their body language, their demeanor, what are the things that they're doing? Are they talking to themselves? Are they engaging with the crowd? Like, it's so fun to see the differences from athlete to athlete, and like what they like to do, what they don't like to do. When I was watching swimming, I think it was one of the men's races, like, there was a guy walking out with his headphones, like, bopping to his music. Like, you could tell, like, he was just, like, having a good time listening to his music. There's another guy with headphones that was just, like, stone cold. Like, who knows? He probably wasn't even listening to anything. And then there was another guy who didn't have any headphones in. He just had his swim cap, goggles on, ready to go. There was another guy that, like, was like listening to the crowd, like, kind of like, yeah, I'm ready, like, look at me. So it's so interesting and fascinating to see these individual athletes, like, what helps them get ready for their race. And I think something that's really important to notice is everyone is different. Like, if there was one kind of recipe that would, like, guarantee you to be a champion, like, everyone would do the same. But the great thing about sports is we're all different. We all have things that work for us and things that don't, and so it's been really fun to kind of like see that. And I think the Sprint documentary does a really good job with that as well, when you get to see the behind the scenes of them, like kind of in the warm-up area, getting ready. Like, what does that look like? Some people are dancing. Some people are very focused on their routine and their stretches. But yeah, that's something that I've found really fascinating. And I've had a fun time kind of just like watching and observing. And I think it would be good too for our young listeners who are trying to find their routine, their groove, to kind of just like notice that and take notes and try things that work for you and see what works and see what doesn't.
100%.
Yeah, so that's been kind of fun to watch.
You know what they call that in the literature, Ashley? Here we go, Professor what? Moore.
Let's hear it.
They call that individual zones of optimal functioning, the Izoff model. Individual zones of optimal functioning. It's by Hannon. I think it was early 2000 is the author. Anyways, basically everything you just said.
Mm-hmm.
We all have our own individual zone of our best, what they call arousal level. So emotional, mm-hmm. psychological, even physical, where we feel like and objectively sometimes perform at our very, very best. And so oftentimes when I teach athletes this, or especially students in the classroom, I invite them to reflect on these type of experiences. What kind of music do you like to listen to in past experiences or past performances where you've performed your best? Is it Beethoven? Or is it Snoop Dogg, who we see a lot within the Olympics? Or are you that person where you don't want to listen to any music and you want to put your cap on and your goggles on and do nothing? Because sometimes that's the best individual zone of optimal functioning for you. And this isn't just for athletes. I mean, I've talked about this with business individuals, with musicians, which is huge as well. Finding and experimenting what works with routines is so imperative, from the inner experience to the outer experience. What are you doing physically? What are you doing psychologically, emotionally? That's going to facilitate the most optimal experience for you. You know, you mentioned, mm-hmm. You know, young people that are perhaps listening to this, and I'm hoping there's some young people that are listening to this, so I'll keep swearing down to a minimum. You know, go find your zone and experiment with what works best for you. I was watching Simone Biles with my daughter, who right now is just in love with Simone. Everything Simone does, she just thinks is the best. She's 7, so she's getting interested in gymnastics and a bunch of other things, but gymnastics in particular. And we were watching, and Simone was getting ready for the is it balancing beam? That's what it's called, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the beam.
Okay.
Yeah.
The beam. Not the bat, just the beam, right? They don't call it the balance. I mean, just the beam. Okay, yeah. Here's my knowledge of gymnastics. Anyways, before she got on, Simone, she took one or two, I think it was one, but it could have been two deep breaths, inhaling through the nose, exhaling through the mouth, and then you can visibly see her go, "You got this."
Mm-hmm.
Those were the words. And I turned to my daughter, I pushed pause. I'm like, "Did you see what she just said right there?" She's like, "No." So we rewinded it. I'm like, she takes a breath. And then we see her again visibly say, "You got this." There's Simone Biles self-talk visibly in action. So the GOAT of gymnastics is talking to herself. She suffered from mental health issues before and probably currently. And she goes through these conditions of being a human being where frailties and weaknesses are in play.
Mm-hmm.
And so she recognizes the importance of, you know, broadly speaking, routine, but also like doing something about explicitly what's going to help her optimally in those moments. And for her, some of that is self-talk and talking to herself in a helpful way. Something as simple and as powerful as, "You got this." And then right after she said that, she went up and bounced off the little trampoline thingy onto the beam. And she started her routine and she did her event and killed it.
Yeah.
So, again, I think it overall, it speaks to the importance of that and finding your zone, incorporating routine type of material in that zone of optimal functioning, and then continually experimenting with it and finding what works best for you so that you can create the most facilitative environment for you and your performance. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, so cool. Yeah, I saw that video of Simone as well. And like I said, just seeing, obviously these athletes are amazing, and watching them in the middle of their event and performing is really cool. But there's also like so much good stuff at the beginning and at the end, like the reactions of how they think their performance went, the reactions of their teammates and the reactions of the crowd, what the announcers educate us on, you know, how they did, especially with gymnastics, like anything they do, I'm like, wow, that's amazing. Must be 10 out of 10. And then the announcer's like, oh, she lost her form a little bit here. And I'm just like, oh, well, I would have given it a 10 out of 10. But yeah, there's just so much good stuff around that actual like event, which is also fun to see and also like very telling on what, like how the athlete thought their event went, how they thought their performance went. But I mean, speaking of teammates' reactions, did you watch Steven Nedorosic's final performance on the pommel horse?
I did, and it was so inspiring, so interesting, and so fun to watch.
Yeah, it was really cool. I've watched his final performance actually a couple times because I was just like amazed at how he kept his legs so straight that entire time and like the arm strength that it requires to do that. It was just like impeccable. But after his event, I think after his event, my favorite part was his teammates like cheering with him, and he didn't have his glasses on, and then all of a sudden he had his glasses in his hand and he puts his glasses back on. And I was just like, how did that transition happen while him and his teammates were like jumping up and down, like cheering? But yeah, his story is pretty cool. Have you looked into his story at all, or have you heard about it?
So I haven't looked too much into it. Just kind of from what I've seen, really, what that's been broadcast, he's a specialist. So correct me if I'm wrong. Does he only do the pommel horse?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And he was like, was he in a rodeo? Like he's kind of a cowboy, just humble.
Yeah. It seems like he comes from very humble background, but yeah, he got selected to be a part of the men's USA gymnastics team specifically for the pommel horse. And so like while his teammates were performing on all the other events, he was just relaxing, chilling, getting in the zone, waiting for his time to execute the pommel horse. And I'm sure you've seen like tons of memes like going around of him just like chilling there with his eyes closed and his head back against the wall, just like probably just like visualizing his perfect routine so that he could help his team secure the bronze medal for like the first time in a very, very long time. But yeah, I think I was talking to Jeff and I think there's some doubters out there that he should like, okay, if he's only good at the pommel horse, why was he selected to this USA men's gymnastics team? But he definitely didn't let those haters get to him. He definitely stepped up and executed, which was really, really cool to see. And I can't imagine that like the pressure that he's probably felt like leading up to that event. Like, of course it's the last event, poor guy just has to wait the whole time and then just steps up and executes, and is pretty cool. And then like the story of him and his glasses, I feel like is what has kind of made him an internet sensation, of people comparing him to Clark Kent. But I don't know. It's kind of cool to see these athletes like Steven with his glasses, or, you know, the USA rugby player who's been, you know, just talking about body image. And like, we all are very, very different. We all have unique bodies and unique challenges. So him with his glasses, I think he was on like an interview that I watched, and I think it was like E! News posted it or something, and they're like, oh, like tell us more about your glasses, because he's wearing sunglasses like in the interview or something. And I guess he has just some sort of, I don't know, condition. I don't know what it's called, but it kind of like makes his eyes like cross-eyed or something. And it was so cute, his reaction was just like, yeah, I'm out here like representing all the people that wear glasses in a good way. And it was just like, it was so wholesome. And I just like really appreciated it. And I loved it because I feel like it's these moments in sports that like bring people together and make people feel seen and heard and included. Like everyone out there that wears glasses now feels like super, super cool, when I'm sure throughout their life they've had moments where they don't feel very cool wearing their glasses. And so it's moments like that also that I really enjoy, that the Olympics kind of brings us all together, just like hearing those stories and watching, you know, him succeed despite his condition. He just takes his glasses off and then puts them back on. It's that simple.
Yeah. No, it there's so many beautiful things to come out of that story and so many of these other stories. One thing that keeps going through my mind is, oh, like he's just like us. He wears glasses and he has to pay bills. And, you know, he's a human being, even though we're seeing him on TV win a bronze, right? Mm-hmm. For the first time in like 25 years or 30 years or something. And it's so fun to see that inspiration and that example for the lay person like myself. You briefly mentioned it. One of the stories that I really wanted to touch on during this conversation, Ash, is the USA women's rugby team.
Mm-hmm.
And how inspiring that has been for me. I'm a late fan to the game of rugby, but in the last like 10 years since I've attended the University of Utah, and BYU is really big on rugby, you know, being around it in the state of Utah, rugby is getting bigger and bigger, and it's become a sport that I really, really enjoy watching.
Mm-hmm.
And then to see this women's team, U.S. women's team, win a medal for the first time ever, and to do it against these powerhouses of New Zealand and South Africa. And then so their match that they won the bronze in was against Australia, which is another huge powerhouse of rugby across this world. It was so fun to watch for many reasons. A couple is there are at least two local, when I say local, again, the state of Utah, gals that are from this state. I think one played basketball at BYU, your alma mater, and then she switched to rugby. Now she's in the Olympics winning a bronze medal. And then another gal, she's from Salt Lake City or somewhere. But anyways, it was so fun to watch that for me, for many reasons, like I mentioned. Another is this collective resiliency was just really on display for me.
Mm-hmm.
I love this topic and this theme of resiliency, whether it's individual or collective. It's a topic that I think is pertinent really to any individual wanting to perform consistently at a high or optimal level, because you're going to inevitably encounter dips and setbacks and challenges. And so you're going to need some sense of resiliency in anything that you're doing, whether it's sport or life related. And so for me, you know, there's a lot of things I think that can go into resiliency, but over the years I've really fallen in love with so Dr. Kellerman is her name and Dr. Seligman, and they've done a whole bunch of research in and around resiliency, and they have what they call these five drivers of resiliency that I know you and I have talked about, and I've talked about this with a lot of different athletes, but I think are really pertinent. One is cognitive agility. That's number one. Two is emotional regulation. Three is optimism. Three is four is self-compassion. And then five is self-efficacy, really just self-confidence, but that's kind of another fancy word for self-confidence. I think all five of those were on display for this USA women's rugby team, this being able to have perspective, which is essentially cognitive agility, regulating emotions during these matches. I remember seeing after they scored the tying try, so they were tied at 14 or 15, I think, and you could see the sideline like starting to get really excited because they knew they were going to win bronze, but then a lot of the teammates or a lot of the gals were like, no, calm down. She still has to kick.
I saw one girl like say, shut up.
Yeah, like shut up. We were not done yet. She still has to kick the winning field goal or the winning try. And then that's when they went up 17 to 15 or whatever the score was. So this regulation was on display. I'm sure there was a sense of optimism throughout this tournament. Otherwise, they wouldn't have been in that position. Self-compassion, you know, having never won a medal in the history of USA women's rugby was really, you know, you have to be compassionate on yourself. Like, let's be the first ones to do this, whether it's a silver, gold, or bronze. And then have some confidence. I mean, there's so much to unpack with confidence as well, from beating your competition up until the point of the bronze medal match. Like, you have to have, you know, that sense of belief to be able to get there and to win. So again, there's so many things that I loved about this story, and collectively there's just so many beautiful things to unpack and to point to. Then third, I know you know this name, Michelle Kang. She happened to donate quite a bit of money to this team, which, again, very inspirational. I don't know if you saw the video. You probably did, because you know exactly who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I'm wearing my Washington Spirit shirt, by the way. Michelle, you see this? Donating $4 million. I think she said $1 million for each year now until 2028, which is in the next Olympics in L.A. And she said, I'm donating $1 million for the next 4 years, so $4 million total, so that you can be prepared, so that this can help win the gold in 2028. Like, that's so why cool. I'm doing this, so you can win. Bronze is fantastic. We love that you won the bronze. This isn't what she said. This is my how I'm interpreting it. But now we need to be on top. And so I love seeing that as well from, you know, someone who's very well known in the women's sports industry and with a lot of money and able to donate it in such beautiful ways to you know, build on the foundation of women's rugby. Men's rugby is making a huge climb in the U.S. Women's is starting to. I'm sure after the Olympics, it's going to get more and more popular. It's such an amazing sport. So it was fun to see that as well within this story. So shout out to Michelle.
Yes, Michelle.
We love you. Way to
we
go.
We love you. If you want to invest in Ditto, we're here. No, I'm just kidding. Such a cool story. I love what you brought up, the collective resilience. And I think that's something that is really hard to find or like replicate. I feel like you often see it when the teams have some sort of, like you said, like story of like, this has never been done before, or they come together and they have this common goal because of this common like factor. Okay, like they've never done this before, like let's go out and do it. I think like that game wasn't easy for them to win. Like, Australia powerhouse, like
I know
rugby, right? AFL is like so much more popular in their country. They have like a huge advantage over the US women's rugby team, and for them to come out and like not give up in the dying seconds of the game, it was just like so inspiring. But when I think back to like with the Spirit, like the year that we won, we definitely had this collective resilience of there was a lot of crap going on around us, and we like came together and we're like, despite all of this, we're going to go out there and we're going to perform. As I'm not saying that you have to have some sort of like, I don't know, tragedy happen to you to be able to like win a championship, but sometimes having something that you guys can all come together on and be like, this sucks, but we're going to move forward and we're going to perform and we're going to win, can be really powerful. And I think the Canadian women's soccer team is going through that right now, unfortunately. Like, again, but I think everyone in the world besides, you know, US fans, we want US to win, but is cheering on Canada because they are kind of going through it right now. Their coach, you can look into it. We don't want to give that side of the story more attention than it deserves. But they're without a coach. They've been deducted 6 points, which is huge. You get three points.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. You get 3 points per win. And so they won two games, and they're still sitting at zero, but they won their third. They're just crushing it. And it's been really fun to see them have that collective resilience of like, you know what, this situation sucks, but we're not going to let it bleed into like our performance. We've all worked very hard. We're all really good players. We're going to come together and we're going to fight. And I think it's just really fun to see like USA rugby women's team is doing it. They had this collective resilience of like, this has never been done before. Let's go out and do it. And then the Canadian women's soccer team is like, this has probably never happened before to anyone in the Olympics being deducted 6 points. Like, let's go out and prove everyone wrong. So that's really cool. I really like that term of just collective resilience, because you can see it when a team has it, you know what it looks like. And sometimes it's hard to like put a finger on exactly what it is, but you can just tell when a team has it, they have that belief, they're looking at each other, they're making eye contact, like no amount of like misfortune is going to sway them from their mission and getting to where they want to go. And so that's one thing I love about the team sports in the Olympics, is just watching, and you can tell when a team has it, they have it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, ditto. It's like the Olympics, and this is for NWSL playoffs. This can be for MSL playoffs. This can be World Series. This can be NFL playoffs. But the Olympics, for whatever reason, and a lot of the reasons we just mentioned, and probably a million more, it's just a wonderful microcosm of life. You can pull so many things, whether you like rugby or not, whether you like fencing or not, or whether you like sport or not. There's so many lessons I think that we can learn from sport, and more specifically from the Olympics, that we can apply to our teams at work, that we can apply to our teams and our family, that we can apply to our individual lives as individuals in doing whatever it is that we're trying to do. It's one of, God, it might be like the overarching reason for me, Ashley, why I'm in love with sport and why I've dedicated my life to teaching and helping people via sport, because there's just so many lessons to learn from it. And we just mentioned about a dozen of them. And so here's my invitation for those that are listening. I'm guessing a lot of you are interested in sport. That's why you've downloaded this podcast. Try to find these lessons, these micro lessons, and maybe they're macro, maybe they're really big lessons, more in your life and in the teams that you're involved in, maybe directly or indirectly, or that you're just watching as a fan, as you know, watching the Olympics, because there's a lot that we can learn in terms of application in making our lives better. That's kind of my invitation. And again, one of the main reasons why I just have a love affair with sport and everything that sport is. So anyways.
Yeah. I mean, ditto to all that for sure. I'm excited to continue watching, and there's going to be a million more stories. We could probably even do another episode on this, but I'm excited and looking forward to it.
Yeah. I know, maybe we do like an Olympics part two episode. Here's part one. Maybe we'll do Olympics part two.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. Really hope you enjoyed some of our insights into the Olympics and some of the stories that we have witnessed. And we're really excited to continue to see more. And please like, subscribe, share, follow. Let us know let us know how we're doing. And yeah, excited for next episode.
Yes. Bye, everybody. Thanks again. Adios.
Should we exit with the Olympic music? Da, 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 da. Yeah, yours is way better than mine.